Good morning and welcome to your morning conversation. And with us this morning is Rashid Ali Cromwell, who's the founder of the Harbor Institute, and he'll be speaking on the Northwest Missouri State campus on Tuesday evening as part of the Plohoff Diversity Lecture Series. And first of all, Rashid, thanks a lot for being with us on our program this morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, John. I really appreciate being on here this morning and look forward to the opportunity of connecting with you and the whole Northwest community.
Well, let's just talk a little bit about some of the things you'll be doing on Tuesday. It's going to be a full day for you, the way it looks like, with an afternoon workshop for Northwest education majors and then your lecture on a Tuesday evening. I guess, first of all, let's just kind of talk about meeting with some education majors on a Tuesday afternoon, or what are some things you want to bring out with those students?
Well, I'm really excited about that opportunity to connect, and working with our first session with the education majors is really important, John, because one of the topics that I'm actually focusing on is cultural competency. And so the topic of the session is actually Got Culture, and it talks about how to really engage students of color with regard to education and learning outcomes and how to better connect with them as future educators. And as we all know, with the United States Census Bureau stating in 2015 that white people will become the minority and the majority will be from the minority, which is people of color, brown and black. And so you have Latino, African-American, Asian. And so preparing for that shift in the societal demographic is going to be important. And oftentimes, John, in some instances, some of our educators may not have a framework or experiences working with those students. And so this session is important because it'll help introduce to some and share to others some best practices and strategies to help bridge any potential gaps that we have there with relating and understanding and communicating to that group of students.
Then I understand your evening lecture is entitled I Never Saw It Like That. And what are some of the main things that you want to get across during your lecture Tuesday evening?
Well, I called it that, John, because I think oftentimes we can get caught in our own personal perspective or our own personal bubble of what the world looks like based on those unique experiences. And while that's important with regard to personal and professional development, it's also important to understand where different people are coming from with various perspectives. And so what the evening session talks about that's open to the entire Northwest Missouri State campus is really kind of expanding upon what we talked about in the morning session, or excuse me, in the afternoon session with the future educators, and really challenging students to be more open and understanding as it relates to diversity and inclusion. And while people may not agree with others' perspectives or how they feel about particular topics, I think it's important to understand where they're coming from and understand why they may see it the way that they do. And through that understanding, we can hope to really promote more civility, more collaboration, and more really understanding around issues that I think are going to take everyone's input and insight to really wrap our hands around.
You've been involved with education for a long time now and going around and delivering lectures such as this. What is the take you have right now on getting this message across, and are you seeing this message being well received at this time?
It is. I think we're at a very unique point in American history and with regard to our society where we've seen the political climate change. And with that change in political climate, I think it brings up a lot of issues to the forefront as it relates to race, as it relates to ethnicity, as it relates to just commonalities. And no longer can we afford to kind of sweep those issues under the rug. I think, John, a lot of times, you know, as we grow up, especially in this society, we're taught, you know, a few things that you should never really talk about. You should never talk about, you know, political affiliation. You should never bring up in a conversation, you know, any faith-based issues or how much people make. And I think along with that is about race, you know, and I think in many instances we're taught and conditioned that way. And while, you know, I respect and understand some of the rationale behind that, you know, you never want to be offensive or say the wrong thing or put someone in a unique situation. But, you know, the flip side of that, kind of the double-edged sword, is that we don't have constructive and really productive conversations about these things. And so when instances occur in the general public and they're high-profile incidents, you know, we haven't been as prepared to really have those type of dialogues like we need to. And so I've gotten a lot of very receptive feedback from all different types of audiences. Honestly, you know, most of these presentations are majority white audiences when I'm going to these different institutions, and from everything from faculty to staff to administration, you know, it's been very well received. And I think, John, a lot of that is the approach and how the information is shared. You know, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, who is the founder of Black History Month, used to say a quote all the time that education, or the mere dissemination of information, is not education. In other words, just because I read something on social media, or just because I see a slide or see you know, something in the paper, doesn't mean I really understand it. And so having spaces and places that are supportive and being able to really work through some of the dialogue that needs to happen and allowing that space, I think is definitely a step in that right direction. And so I'm really thankful for Northwest for considering me for this lecture series. I know it's something that they've had for a while, and providing that opportunity to be able to have those discussions and dialogue.
Now, you talked about the political climate that we're currently in. Are you seeing, as you go around and talk to various groups, that there's more of an interest in people becoming more active in these discussions and in just being more involved with however their politics lean right now because of what's been taking place on the national level with politics?
Yeah, I do. I do, John. I think, you know, you see that interest because people want outlets. People want to be able to share and express how they feel. I mean, you know, the last 10 years we've seen social media be an outlet for people to express themselves. But in other instances, you know, people want to be able to communicate and dialogue and have exchanges regarding this. And so I think they're looking for that. And I think initially when they see these different opportunities, they may think it's something different than what they, you know, expectation-wise. In other words, they might think it's something that, you know, is confrontational or adversarial in some instances. But in actuality, it's really a neutral platform, and that's why I called it that. You know, I never thought about that, because probably if I had to rank, like, the top three things people say from the feedback that I get, you know, doing assessments and doing evaluations, is that comment. You know, whether you're male, female, you identify that way, no matter what your race or ethnicity, how you identify, people constantly say that comment back. And I think it's a testament to, you know, the interest and the opportunity to be able to, you know, challenge and share how people think and why they think what they think about these issues.
How has social media affected discussions on these type of issues? It seems like to a certain degree people can insulate themselves from hearing from people who maybe think differently than they do just by the friends they have on Facebook or who they follow on Twitter, to where they maybe don't get the other side of certain issues.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, the social media is a great thing, but it's a powerful tool, John, and it can be utilized in good ways and bad ways. And part of the, I think, thing that can be tricky, and this is, you know, I know a lot of people have been following the news lately about Facebook and how the data was possibly utilized in a way that it wasn't intended to. You know, social media is based on technology, and a lot of those technology-driven platforms are based on algorithms. And some of those algorithms, you know, to my point, will shift one way if they see you putting in words that are associated with how you affiliate politically. And then, you know, all of the people associated with that will kind of, you know, go in that direction. And so what I'm saying is it doesn't really, I think in some instances, provide a equitable platform, or at least something where I can hear what the other person is saying or the other side is saying and be able to have some type of constructive, you know, bilateral dialogue. I think oftentimes it's unilateral. It's this is what I think, this is what I believe, this is why I'm right, instead of just taking a step back and saying, well, wait a minute, let me understand why you think the way that you think. And I really truly believe, and this is one of the things that I share oftentimes in the presentation, is from a historical context, there's so many things that we can learn. I think one thing with Dr. Martin Luther King that often gets kind of, I don't want to say ignored, but I think definitely undervalued, is the way that he framed issues, John. So oftentimes he would frame issues in a non-political way. You know, if you know a lot about Dr. King, he wasn't affiliated with any particular political party. And so when he would bring up issues of civil rights, they were framed in morality. They were framed in spirituality. They were framed in a human being context. And what that allowed was people from different places across the country, different religious faiths, different political ideologies, to say, wait a minute, you know, this is an issue of morality that we're dealing with. It doesn't matter where you're from or what you believe. And so you would see this collaboration, you would see this coalition building that he was very successful in doing, because of not just him framing it in a nonviolent way, which we focus often on, but it was framed in a way that wasn't politically polarizing. And I think now that's where we lose a lot of opportunity to have rich discussions and dialogue, because we frame it in a way where I believe this politically or I believe that politically, instead of saying, well, what are the core issues that we're dealing with? And what, as human beings, are we experiencing across the board? And so these presentations that I've had the opportunity to do across the country, I think resonate in that spirit and embody that kind of overall approach. And I think that's why we've seen them be successful, and we've seen them be really receptive throughout the country.
I would imagine, too, one of the things that's good about your lectures, it gets people out where they can talk face-to-face, as opposed to maybe hiding behind their computer or their phone where they can just chat or whatever there without getting that really personal contact with other people.
Absolutely. I mean, these are personal issues, John. There's no way to kind of hide from these things. You know, they resonate to the core of how we identify as people. And I think, you know, those social media platforms and even radio and TV in some instance may not allow that personal interaction. And I always am excited to speak at colleges and universities because, again, I think that's something we overlook when we look about at a lot of our social change. A lot of the dialogue and a lot of the activity started on college campuses, whether it was, you know, through programs that they were having, town hall meetings, even protests that occurred. They were really catalysts because I think it draws people from different cross sections of the community. It really galvanizes the young people who are always at the forefront of issues. We saw last weekend in D.C. where you have, you know, 13, 14, 15-year-olds mobilizing, you know, thousands of students from across the country around issues of violence in the school system. And so being on a college or university campus, I think, is a great kind of intersectionality type platform that allows for those discussions and dialogue to occur. And to your point, it's more personal. And so I think, you know, returning that personal feel to it really helps attach, you know, how these issues impact other people when you can, you know, have the opportunity to present them face to face.
Then we're talking with Rashid Ali Cromwell, who is the founder of the Harbor Institute. He'll be speaking Tuesday evening for the Northwest Missouri State's Spring Plohoff Diversity Lecture. And one thing, Rashid, I think we ought to talk about, too, is just mention you're the founder of the Harbor Institute. Just explain what the Harbor Institute is.
Sure. The Harbor Institute is an educational consulting firm based out of Washington, D.C., where we focus on primarily three areas, which is leadership development, cultural competency, and hazing prevention and intervention, especially as it relates to fraternal organizations. And so this area where I'm speaking at Northwest resonates with this area, the second one that I mentioned with regard to cultural competency, which is simply better understanding, increasing awareness and sensitivity as it relates to issues of diversity and inclusion. And we do that, John, in a number of different ways, one which I'll be with Northwest in the session is a campus-wide presentation, but we also do consulting to administrators at colleges and universities, as well as nonprofits and companies, to better help them understand and engage in how to continue to improve their community. Additionally, at Harbor Institute, we have conferences and institutes, which are places and spaces that we've designed around some of these particular issues, where you have the opportunity to not just meet people, for example, from Northwest, but from other colleges and universities or other nonprofits across the country. And so we're very happy with the work that we're doing. This is our 10th year of being in existence, and we're very proud. So far, we've reached over 250 colleges and universities in over 38 states. And so we have a long history of working with Northwest Missouri State for the last 5 or 6 years, and working with them from everything from their multicultural department all the way to their Greek fraternity sorority department through leadership. And so we've had the capacity and the ability to work with them in a lot of different facets, and this presentation through the lecture series is just another form of us doing it.
And you mentioned the Greek life. I understand, too, that you've got a book coming out dealing with Greek life on university campuses.
Absolutely. We're really excited about that, John. We actually have two that we're releasing. The first, which will be out in May, is called The Harbor Institute's Guide to Cultural Fraternal-Based Organizations. We call them CBFOs, Culturally Based Fraternal Organizations. And what this is a resource. Oftentimes in Greek life, people associate fraternities and sororities with predominantly white fraternities and sororities, but there are many different organizations, whether they're Asian American interest organizations, Native American organizations, Black, Latino, Latina, and even LGBT organizations that make up over, we have 200 different ones in this resource that we've compiled, which helps people better, again, get a frame for what Greek life is across the board, and to get a little bit more information on the history, mission, and purpose. More importantly, the contact information if they're interested in starting a chapter on their campus. That's important, like I mentioned earlier, with regard to how the country is shifting racially and ethnically with regard to demographics. That in theory means it's going to be an increase on college and university campuses, which in theory means there's going to be an increase in interest in these support organizations like fraternities and sororities. And so this resource is going to be awesome. We've already sold several copies of it. It's available on the website at theharborinstitute.com under our store. That's H-A-R-B-O-R, Institute, all one word, .com. And under the store, you'll see that resource that's available. And so we're really excited about that, whether they're campus-based professionals, regional or national officers of any of the fraternities and sororities, or people that are just interested in learning more. We think this will be a great resource and a great tool.
All right. Well, Rashid, thanks a lot for being with us this morning on our program. And I know a lot of people are looking forward to your lecture coming up Tuesday evening.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity for the interview, and I definitely look forward to connecting.
And we've been speaking with Rashid Ali Cromwell. We'll be speaking Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock at the Charles Johnson Theater of the Olive Deluce Fine Arts Building on the Northwest Missouri State Campus as part of the Plohoff Diversity Lecture. For Rashid Ali Cromwell, I'm John Coffey, and that's your Morning Conversation.